And you're right. Some people are going to go nuts. I mean, we're going nuts. Some people are going to go nuts and hurt people. Some people are going to go nuts and write books or spend, hours and hours looking at video. And
Yeah.
then what have we been on? We've been talking for 3.5 hours about something that most people don't have 5 minutes for.
Yeah,
A lot of people think we're crazy.
absolutely. Absolutely. What was it the other day? Someone said, "Oh, so and so?" Oh, yeah. Yeah, she said you're kind of weird. At first I wanted to get upset, or it's never nice to have your ego brushed up against like that, but I was like, "Yeah, I am fucking weird." So, yeah, that's about right. If she didn't think I was weird, that's when you might would have a problem.
I mean, we at weird. I mean, again, so many things are changing. What the hell is weird?
Yeah.
Reality TV is fucking weird to me.
Well,
What
me and Alan say
exactly?
this all the time. We sit down in front of broadcast television and I get literally physically ill.
As do I, yeah.
And
Why do
that
you keep
is,
doing it?
well,
No.
I
Yeah.
don't, but I'm just saying that whenever I'm at someone's
Yeah.
house and they say, sit down,
Yeah.
we're going to watch this show, very rarely can I be comfortable watching the show, but especially if it's not DVR and you can fast forward through the commercials. I mean, the
Right.
commercials are just at a level of just insanity. And, if I have to split a line down the middle of American culture and say, if you can sit and watch 2 hours of channel ABC without flipping the channel and not getting up from the couch, well, then you have a serious fucking mental illness. You know what I mean? Like, I can be okay with those people there then reflecting and going, no, nobody, you're the one with the mental illness. You sit there for 2 hours listening to Pink Floyd over Kubrick films. Like, I'm very comfortable with them reflecting that upon me and calling me crazy. Because whatever medicine they're taking is just toxic. It's just toxic. Especially if they're sucking down a 32-ounce Coke and a Big Mac. I mean, just double your poison.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I just ultimately, you can prop that up, but that's not sustainable. I mean, that's why I take a really hard line on this exploration around trusting it and not worrying. This is a conversation Al and I have a lot, is like, is he is, he's a whatever. He's more, in some ways, a lot more thoughtful about other people's responses to what he does than I am.
And
And I,
wait, and because I'm also getting, you have to bear in
yeah, I
mind.
understand. You deal with a lot more people. You have a different role in the sync community. I guess my point is that, though, like, that kind of consciousness, that kind of lack of consciousness is going to weed itself out.
Right.
The children born into those families, the ones who don't go mad, will go and start shooting people, will go mad in other ways. You just can't, you like you're saying, William. You can't smoke this kind of pot, get this kind of access to information, and not be curious about Alistair. If you're going to be checking out porn, why aren't you all? You're also going to be checking out the weird thing that someone said, and someone like you, someone reads a reference to Crowley in some post on Facebook, and they'll go look it up, and it's not hidden. They don't have to go into a library and have someone shame them into feeling like they're going to go to hell. Have a hamburger, don't think about it. Like, that there
Well,
is something positive in this crackification.
and how insane is it that, at this point, every computer in every home is a portal to Aleister Crowley at the click of a button, and that might upset people. Yet there is more free pornography at the click of a button on the internet in every home, in every bedroom of every child. And people just don't seem to really be too concerned. I'd be much more concerned with, well, I don't know. That's interesting. You walk, what are you doing in there? You knock on the door. Nothing. And they're reading the book of the law. Oh, that's fine. go about your business. That's it. If you have any questions, let me know. I'll be downstairs. But if they're watching, you know, a 40-man gangbang or, you know, whatever it is that's out there, you know, I'm sure plenty of parents would, at this point in many homes, fucking porno, man. It's so legitimized. It's so everywhere. It's just... And it's not even going to be brought up in the conventions as a topic of discussion. You know what I mean? It's just accepted.
Or it just gets attacked as being immoral rather than there being an intelligent conversation about it. So I think there is an intelligent way to have a conversation about it.
Because, like, I'll say this. I quit drinking alcohol for a year. I got to a point in my life where I said, I need to put the bottle down. And I signed a contract with myself. I said, for 12 months, just no booze. And I was a bartender back then, too. So did my job, and I started school. And for about 14, 15 months, I never had a drop. And went back to the bottle here and there with some mixed results. But, you know, that was an interesting 12 months. Now, recently... to see if I could do it, and also to kind of take a stance on it, I stopped watching pornography, and I had a contract with myself where I said, I'm not going to access any internet pornography for a year. So as of January 1st of this year, I have not accessed any site whatsoever. It's kind of hard to avoid in certain arenas. Like, I watched the show True Blood the other night that was on HBO. I saw the season finale. I don't watch the show, but my sister and my brother-in-law watch it.
I just watched it.
And that's straight up pornography. I mean, it is pornography. If you were going to play me Caligula, the movie from the 80s from Guccione and Penthouse Films, I mean, if you're going to draw a circle around films that are pornography, what they produce in True Blood, you'd have to consider X-rated. That
How
is,
so?
The violence, the sexuality is at such an extreme level and such explicit nature that I don't think you would let children under 17 into a movie theater to see that without parental guidance.
See, now, it's interesting you said the violence, because that's actually where my concern comes in. I actually have no issue, or, well, I guess I shouldn't say no issue, but for the most part, I have no issue with porn, but I have an issue with the fact that it's been so turned into a violent thing, that it's, and that, you know, I guess I said, if I have a nature with it, it's that it's at its heart, it's predatory in how it operates, not so much on the audience, but on the participants, you know, just.
I agree. The industry of it.
Right. I mean,
I want to jump in as an industry person on this, is that is, I noticed this when I first got to Hollywood. There, if you're an actor in Hollywood and if you are start working at all, you join a union. You have to join a union. They won't let you work, and, you know, they'll shut down productions that aren't obeying union rules, because actors, because that, you know, once you get on a set, whoever's paying you can make you do anything. Or, you know, and they, you know, you're off in the middle of the desert shooting something. It's not like you can't even leave. So there have to be these really intensely strong unions to protect the actors, the writers, the directors, the creative people in these works. And athletes can join the Screen Actors Guild. Basically, the only ones who can't join the Screen Actors Guild are porn stars. Because all porn films are non-union, and the union doesn't, you know, sort of lets that be the case. They don't want to have any part of it because they're, you know, conservative and, you know, self-hating like the rest of Americans. But that's, I mean, what it really comes down to is that the reason porn is so predatory, all film is predatory. It's only allowed to be predatory because the unions there won't deal with it, and that goes to a level of shame, which is the sad thing about the porn conversation. And I think maybe this is where you're going, Alan, is that it always goes into judging the sexuality of it rather than going at the violence of it. Or, yeah, on the other hand, or going point. After films that are incredibly violent. Like, The Matrix is porn, is a, you know, a porn for violence fans. And the thing that I the put the Who's music to it, and even more so.
I remember being, I mean, I'm going to be incredibly blunt here. I mean, there was a point when I was a, you know, a young teenager where seeing a something violent on TV would give me an erection. And I sort of realized that, and I was like, that's weird. Why does my mind make this connection here? And just remember being a teenager thinking, you know, why do violent scenes give me an erection? Now, you know, getting old, so I just said I didn't have an issue with porn, and to a large extent, I still don't. Like you said, I make the distinction between the sexuality. I don't think the sexuality should be demonized. I think the sexuality should be embraced. There is the question of the violence and the predatory nature. I worked, I've probably told you guys this, I mean, I worked for about a year in the porn industry. I was offered a job. Someone needed a video editor. I took, and they said, you know, it's for porn. And I was like, okay, I don't have an issue with that. And I really didn't until we got to the point where, like, now I'm watching these films to edit them down, and I see the behind the scenes. You know, I see the material that's cut out, and I see how they're being treated, and I see the look on the woman's face, and I see just how fucked up it is.
That's crazy, man.
And then when we started filming, and like, so then they asked me, hey, well, you know, would you be interested in filming some stuff for additional money? And I said, okay, you know, sure, I'm not going to turn down the money, okay. And, but, you know, this is something where the last girl I worked with, she was a girl who had a crack addiction. And her thing was she worked as a prostitute, and she didn't want to be in porn. Her thing was, like, she sort of drew a line there, or at least as a prostitute, it was something that was just between her and the person, and there was no lasting record of it. You know, but she didn't want to be 40, 50 years old and, you know, have her child see videos of her on the internet or whatever it might be. And these guys were, you know, basically bribing her with coke and feeding her coke, going, come on, come on, you know, it's no different, do this. And it's like a really young girl, and it just really bothered me. And a lot of this stuff, and I have to admit, though, but then there were things that, so when I started to think of it as this really bad thing, I was like, I can't do this. And I worked with this woman who was so comfortable with herself and her sexuality, and like really challenged me in the other way to make me realize it wasn't all bad, that there were people who were mature and in control of their actions and their decisions, and who saw it as, hey, you know, I have an asset here that I can use, you know, why the fuck not? I, you know, and so I was challenged in a lot of different ways. As I said, I don't have an issue with the sexuality. I do have a really big issue with violence, and that it's glorified, and that our sexuality is turned violent, and that it's, you know, it's turned this idea of humiliation. You know, part of my job would be to see what trends there were in porn, you know, to see, like, oh, is it something we should be incorporating into our films and stuff like that. And so we would have fairly intelligent conversations about it. But then I really saw, like, the guy who ran it, you know, he had this very different idea of what was sexy than I did. And he was someone who was really into humiliation. And he had this, he showed me this website and this video once that, like, really fucked with my head so bad. I was just like, I can't do this. Like, It wasn't the company I worked for, but he showed me this, and that he thought it was, like, so cool. And I was like, what the fuck? It was called something like crack whore humiliation or something like that. And they would take this, you know, 40-year-old woman with no teeth who's a total crack addict, and the first 20, 30 minutes of the film is just them interviewing her about, how did you end up with this crack addiction, and, you know, tell us about your life, and tell us about what happened, and tell us all the horrible things that have happened to you. And then when she's opened her soul and said all these things, all right, now suck my dick and let me come all over your face. And I was just like, what the fuck is this? And that was the moment at which I was really terrified as to what, you know, you can say it's not part of the, those people don't count, they're not part of the conversation, we don't have to acknowledge them, but the fact, I don't know, man, it's like I can't ignore shit like that. I can't ignore the fact that there are people out there who are...
Well, I don't think you have to. I think it's, this is a nice parallel for what we're talking about. So, is filming sex violent? No. That's just using, that's just, there's an activity that people do when you put it on film. What then comes of it? Like, is, like what you were talking about, sync and the people who go nuts on it, who get the light laser, you know, effect, is that, you know, does that mean that sync is bad, or does that mean that sync is powerful and powerful things hit people in, you know, in different ways? And luckily, our sync consciousness has not been nearly as brutalized and just destroyed as our sexuality. Like, there's nobody... I don't think you could have a... I've never met anyone who I felt was... I don't want to say I've never met anybody who was. I don't think it's possible to be sexually healthy in our society. And if you met someone who was, they would seem very dangerous and they would probably get locked up. Like, sexual health would mean... is part of health is expression. And the any expression of sexuality in the society could get you locked up. It's just scary to people. Like, just literally taking out your cock would be seen as a violent act. And in a lot of ways it would be in this society. But the idea that to live in a society where to show a part of your body in public is a violent act, that's how unhealthy we are sexually.
Like, so, the Janet Jackson thing. One nipple almost caused battles in the streets. That
yeah,
was like
no
gonna
one,
tear down the
but
country.
No one minded that it took place in the middle of a 3-hour event dedicated to men beating the shit out of each other. Yeah. That was my biggest issue with that, is the entire Super Bowl was this incredibly violent ritual praising, you know, testosterone and violence. And then, oh my God, there's a sense of female sexuality here. How dare they? You know, people saying, my 9-year-old child was watching this, and how do I explain that to my child? Listen, asshole, why don't you explain to your child why you sat them down at 11 o'clock at night to watch 3 hours of men beating the shit out of each other? Sorry.
No problem.
You know what I'd like to know? I'd like to know, in the porn industry today, if you could, you know, define it and get the numbers. And you looked at the average age of every single female involved in the industry, so whether actor, director, owner, whatever, and you looked at the average age of every man involved in the porn industry, what do you think that gap would be?
About 20 years.
Wouldn't it? Doesn't that freak you the fuck out?
Why was that? But why is that?
Yeah, that actually makes sense to me.
Saying it makes sense, because what does that say? It says you have older men.
I get what you're saying, but I see it differently. Is to say, the reason I think it makes sense is because also there's a level of perhaps maybe comfort with showing your dick on screen, or a certain level of sexual confidence, or all these things that come perhaps with a little bit of age, whereas. Yeah, maybe for the girls, they see themselves at the peak of their beauty, let's say, the peak of their sexual appeal to mainstream, so they're taking advantage of that, whereas the men, they might be perhaps post-peak sexuality, but they're perhaps peak sexual confidence, learning to control your orgasm, learning to be comfortable having an erection for that long, having an erection with a bunch of people standing around you with video cameras, I think things like that have to be factored in also. I completely understand your point, but I just say I think there are other variables at play.
Yeah, it's not really speaking towards the performance. It's speaking towards, you know, that scene in Mulholland Drive where she goes to the audition, and and it's the most unbelievable scene, one of my favorite all time, of how she falls into the role and then the two actors fall into that space of, are we acting or is this already happening or is this happening? And it's a sick and twisted scene, right? He's like the older father of his, of her friend, and he's making a sexual pass at her, and there's something illicit about it and something that's not quite right. But in her sort of, she's coming out of her innocent shell and she's into it. And once the scene is done, she sort of is rattled, you know, she's gone so deep. But the whole feel of that scene is, let's just get some young girl in here to do this scene and see how far she'll go. Let's test the waters with this new one. And it's like they get fresh young meat with these women who come from, and I don't want to stereotype, but usually it seems like broken family situations, in desperate situations. And they know they possess something that people want, who are these 20-year older than them men, who will give them money and seemingly a way out of a bad situation for doing something that just feels good. But really, do you want your daughter in a porn film? Well, would you feel like you've done
let's back up. See, that goes to what I'm talking about. So no one would say, would you want your son to be a football star in the same way that you just said that? But to me, no difference. Zero difference. And yes, I would want my daughter to be able to do whatever she did healthy. And if she was my daughter and she learned from me, she'd know that nothing in the entertainment business is healthy. So you're always going to be a fucking whore, no matter what you do in this business. So whatever you do, do it fucking awesome and make sure that you have a great agent and that you're well taken care of. But yes, I would so much rather that my daughter, and I don't have a daughter, but if I had a daughter, that she was a porn star than fucking a grocery clerk or, than the matron of some fucking church. I would be so much prouder.
Porn,
yes.
Porn industry is a symptom of the Gnostic black iron prison that we live in. The fact that you can come from, the fact that you even entertain the idea of falling into a relationship where you want to raise children into this world and be okay with that child's path in life spending 5 years in a porn career, it just, that's not part of my fiction, man. That's just not part of my, like.
It's sort of like assuming that, I mean, again, we're just talking hypothetically, but what you're assuming is that there's a stasis, that porn is bad, that having sex on film is bad.
No, the porn industry as it is today in America is a cancerous, it's a symptom of disease.
But it's not the disease. And what I would say is the only way that changes is strong women getting in, taking charge of that industry, owning it and unionizing it so that the women who are in it are well taken, are protected.
Yeah,
but that's only going to happen if there are strong women in the industry. So I would encourage strong women who are super hot and comfortable having sex on film to get into that industry, get into places of power, become the 40-year-olds who then run the industry. But that only happens if you support it. You can't, like, if you ghettoize that industry and make it bad, then all you do is put it into the hands of the bad people. That's my experience on the ground with hanging out with, like, having friends who have worked in the porn industry.
And as I said, I was challenged that I met women who were that, who were incredibly strong and, you know, they were in control of the situation, not the other way around. And that they were completely comfortable or fully aware of what they were doing. And, you know, that was not a bad thing, and that's where I still say, that it's not inherently bad, and I would actually agree with Andres. I don't see a distinction between saying I would never want my son to be a football player. I wouldn't want my son to be a football player. I don't mind saying that, but if that's what he wanted, okay, go for it. You know, do your thing. But that's not. I don't really see a distinction of saying, here's someone who's really good at running. Here's someone who's really good at throwing a ball around. Hey, here's someone who's really good at fucking. You know, if that's your skill and you're in control of it, again, I really don't see
anything. Okay, here's the creepy, I'll take it to the doom zone. Let's say you have a daughter who's 14, but she looks like she's 18. And some motherfucker comes and says, I will pay her $5 million to come to my country where it's legal to take naked pictures and put her in movies. And the 14-year-old says, I've had sex before. I love it. And I also like money. Where do I sign?
Well, I would think that, I mean, yeah, you're right. That's in the sort of the doom zone, because that's the real question is not, what does the 14-year-old daughter want to do? But what, like, how craven is and pimp-like are the parents?
Right.
And, you know, yeah, if you have craven, again, the problem is, again, there isn't sex. The problem is money and money consciousness. Like, the problem in that situation is the $5 million, that it might tempt some parents to put a 14-year-old daughter into that situation.
Look at the parents who sold their kids to sleep with Michael Jackson. Yeah, you're going to give me a few $1 million, you can go have a sleepover with Michael Jackson. But
how about the Allman brother who saw the young blonde girl in the diner in the South and says to the parents, it works out a deal to marry her or to take her on the road when she's 16. Do you remember who that girl is? That porn star Savannah?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that story? Who shot her head off when she was like 24? It's a tragic, tragic story. Yeah. But it all started with, I think it was Greg Allman on the road, sees a cute little teenage girl, talks to the parents, and the girl goes off on the road with him.
Well, I'll give you that the Allman brothers are pretty bad. All around. Like,
it all comes back to musical integrity, really.
No, when their music's solid.
I'm sure Keith Moon never turned some poor girl out. Oh.
I saw the Allman Brothers live. They had a tower of 4 drummers and like 8 guitarists. That was a pretty intense jam session.
I bet it was.
So your point is valid. Like I said, that's why ultimately I think what we're finding here is you're raising the argument that I was saying about this weird philosophy slash sink. You know, jumping into the ocean, can people drown? Yes. This is what I've been trying to stress the last 2 weeks. It's like I'm very conscious of the fact that people can drown in these waters. I don't know what our responsibility is there. I just want to, for a quick moment, to take it back to the reason, like, I've been raising this, like, sink-wise and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, Andra said, I have a different role in this community. I don't exactly know how that happened. I don't know if it's, you know, whatever it is, but I'm very aware. I don't feel, you know, I feel torn as to that. I don't have the ability to just be the artist that does whatever the fuck they want to do. I have to be, I feel very self-aware that, I mean, I've gotten emails. I got an email from a guy who said, you know, he sent me an email asking me, you know, what's the meaning of life? And I was like, I don't know. Why do you think I would know? You know, and all this stuff. He's like, come on, you know, I know you know, just tell me. And I'm like, what do you, you know, I said, listen, whatever it might be for me, it's not going to be for you. I was like, you know, that's not for me to say. It's not, I was like, what in a million years would make you think that I have an answer to any of these questions? I don't want to be your fucking guru. I don't want to be anything. Like, and then he's like, you know, I emailed Jake Coetzee, and Jake Coetzee didn't respond to me. And if you, you know, and I feel like you guys are ignoring me. And if you keep ignoring me, I don't see any other resolve except to kill myself. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? what the fuck is this? Is someone fucking with me, or is there a real human life at risk here? And I think it was very genuine. I think the guy was really fucked in the head. And so, yeah, there are people fucking drowning. And yeah. I feel that there is a responsibility to be very, as Andre said, very gentle with them. And I trust me, man, I want to be the fucking wild man. And yet I know that I can't. There's something else at stake here. And even though I know, so whatever. So, but I want to stress is that that doesn't mean that people aren't strong swimmers. It doesn't mean that there aren't, you know, if we go back to the surfing metaphor, the ocean metaphor, you know, I wouldn't tell a 4-year-old kid to go jump into the deep end of the ocean and good luck to you. So no, you wouldn't send a 14-year-old girl to go have a porn career or whatever, you know, these things. You wouldn't send a kid that doesn't know how to swim, you wouldn't just toss them into the ocean. That doesn't mean that there aren't people who have developed themselves, have confidence in themselves, and have mastered something that they are able to actually ride that wave. So, you know, am I going to go up to, you know, the professional surfer guy? I mean, I don't, you know, I assume there's professional surfers. You might go up to some, you know, professional surfer guy and say, like, what are you doing? Like, was it that famous girl who had, like, she was a surfer and had, like, her arm bitten off by a shark and she kept surfing? You know, good for you, man. Good for you. So she's got it. She's in control. She's understands the risks better than you or I could imagine them. And yet she understands that this is still what she loves, and this is still what that she is in control of the situation. She's not going to let the shark or the ocean, you know, dissuade her. That said, I'm not going to advocate that a bunch of, you know, children playing on the beach, building sandcastles that don't know how to swim, I'm not just going to go around tossing them into the ocean. I'm not going to be a merry prankster that gives LSD to everybody. There should be a sense of a little bit of care that goes into how we approach this. You know, I could tell you more fucked up stories about the porn industry, things that I've seen, things that really disturbed me, but, you know, use your imagination if you want. I mean, if you want to tell, but like my thing is I was also challenged at that moment where I was really like, I started to think, oh, this is really bad. I thought there was nothing wrong here, but this is really bad. And then I met a few really strong women who made me realize, oh, wait, that's not just an across-the-board case. There were people who really made me realize that was their decision to make. That was their, as Jerry Garcia sings, it's the buck dancer's choice, my friend. You know, maybe not for everyone. A lot of people get suckered into it. But there are people who know what they're doing and are in control of the situation. Like Andra, I actually would agree with Andra in this case, is that if more people like that actually were the ones making decisions rather than the horny, violent, abusive males, then it wouldn't be what it is.
That's why I had Nina Hartley on Radio 8 Ball, because I think she's a great, like, the elder women porn stars who aren't like hiding that they did that and have stayed in the industry, being elders to the women who come up. Those women need to be need to be supported.
Well, here goes back to the numbers. How many different women, if you ballpark a number for me in your head, how many women in America since 1980 have appeared in a hardcore or a pornographic film?
I don't know. But that's
but now tell me, if you can name on one hand, how many strong, successful women that you can name that found their way through a porn career and are out there, outspoken, and well-respected or treated as if they are a legitimate.
Well, see, now you tacked some things on there. Like, I was with you, and you were like, women who have been in the, and I would branch it not to just be porn, but the sex industry. Women who have been in the sex industry, who have become elders and are really strong and are respected in their community,
Okay.
But when you start to get into if they're respected by the hypocritical, sex hating world, like, you know, school marmish world that we live in, no, I mean, they're at that point.
That's impossible. That's impossible.
Yeah, at that point, well, it's not impossible. It's not impossible again, if shows, if like the sort of more legitimate, like weirdly, like of course, porn stars are the only group maybe. They're like the only group that's less legitimate than us.
and
that's a nature of sexism, but they're more legitimate financially, and that's a, you know, and I think it's important. I think it's incumbent upon people who want healthy sexuality to then reach out and support those people. Having people like Nina Hartley on a show, and not even necessarily to talk about sex or about porn, but you know, the game in the game of Radio 8 Ball, she just gets to ask a question, and she asked a great one, and we got a great answer. But
yeah, imagine someone who's able to conquer that, how strong that person and how interesting that person must be on other levels. You don't, yes, it doesn't have to be just a sex conversation. And Bill, just to give you a sort of ballpark, that now again, this is just my experience after a year of doing it, was I would say, I probably 8 to 3. Eight that I thought, oh my God, these are victims of something that they can't control, and 3 that I thought, holy shit, you know what you're doing.
Wow, that's pretty stunning, man. Because, you know, I mean, is it a safety net? Are we glad that the porn safety net is there for these wayward women who are spiraling out of control to have, you know, to get a paycheck?
There are certainly, I've had friends, Rogan, Russell Marshall, who wrote the Attic Expeditions. That's sort of his argument. We've talked about this. And it's just that, is that the kind of people who gravitate towards, who will sell their sexuality for money because they're broke, will do that and find a way to do that. And at least within the porn industry, there is some kind of community. It offers some kind of weird support that they're not going to find on the street, being a street prostitute without any resources. But again, it all comes back to poverty. It's not really about sex. It's about poverty and what that turns us into, because nobody is crying about the women who go out there and use sexuality to get people to buy them drinks or to get them to marry them and then divorce them and give them a bunch of money. Like, that's not. But to me, it's the same. That's sort of, it's still a fractured use of sexuality, which would be the conversation we'd be having if we weren't perpetually in a state of fear that our 14-year-old daughters were going to get raped. Or sons.
Yes.
You know. I love to keep doing this, but it's 2:30 and I kind of have to get my day going.
Yeah, I was
going.
Just doing the same thing. So, what you want to go, leave us with any, you know, bring it back to anything earlier. What's a good note to end on?
Well, all I wanted to say was that I feel a little bit let down because you told me that we were going to be getting into conflict in the sync community. And this has been, for the most part, a very agreeable conversation. So there's been an incredible lack of conflict.
Yes, this is way too fucking peaceful.
All right, fuck you both very much.
Yeah.
this has been a miserable few hours for me, and I hope to never speak to either of you again.
Yeah, what a waste of time, bro. Hey, it was a pleasure meeting you and talking to you today, Andras, and I really look forward to seeing what you put together.
Yeah, it's burning slow, so I might not get it off until Monday, but... if I manage to get these burned before I have to leave, I will send something off to you today. And it's been a pleasure meeting you as well. And I'll look for the. Tell me you describe the title that you refer to it as is
the Kubrick Transformer.
The Kubrick Transformer.
Yeah, and I put it into plastic disc holders with photographs on the outside of it. So it should be a different image still from something Kubrick related.
Yeah, no, I remember the look of it. So, I'll dig it out.
Yeah, and if you can't find it, I'll just send you another copy.
Cool. Very cool. Thanks, Alan, for inviting me to participate in this.
Thank you. Yeah, this was awesome having you on. And I know you and I are trying to touch base for other stuff.
Maybe a late night? No, how about... let's just check it out. Let's do this through email.
Yeah, exactly. I'm doing a show tonight. If anyone's around, 9 p.m. Eastern on the H2O Radio Network, I believe it's called. The link's on my Facebook. And if I even get this uploaded before 9 p.m., anyone wants to hear me talk for more than 4 hours, I'll be doing another show tonight.
he's the Lenny Bruce of Sync.
Hey, was it true that you guys were just discussing that?
Yes.
Album?
Yes.
Too much.
Yeah.
Man.
So I don't know if you caught that, Andras. So Andras says I was talking shit about my Catholic upbringing and the hypocrisy I saw in the Catholic Church, and he goes, "Oh, you should listen to this Lenny Bruce tirade," and he sends me the YouTube link, and I didn't get to listen to it till the next day. So I listened to it while I was like doing some dishes. I put it on. I listened to it. And then like 2 hours later, you put on Facebook, "Hey, I just finished transcribing the entire speech." It just really...
Wait a second. Well, I didn't even know this. So William, you were transcribing Lenny Bruce's that concert, the Berkeley concert?
The Berkeley concert, yeah.
The exact same concert.
Yeah. It took me like 12 hours over like 3 days, man. It was, spent a lot of time in there.
I bet. Oh, that what a great way. You know, that's how Hunter S. Thompson, he taught himself to write by rewriting Hemingway and F. Scott Fitzgerald. Like he would just type it out.
Yeah, it's freaky, man, because it's affected my speech patterns. It's affected I'm just seeing and thinking through that mind a little bit more than I usually do, because I was pretty obsessed with Lenny Bruce over the last 5 or 6 years. But to see it typed out, to see all the words and to try to get everything on there, I'll send you guys a copy. It's pretty sensational, man. And I'm just amazed that there isn't a transcribed copy out there, at least in internet land.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Have you seen the documentary Swear to Tell the Truth?
Yeah.
If you look in the credits under research, you'll see my name come up. I worked on that film. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. This will make any Lenny Bruce fan jealous. It makes me jealous because I'm not there anymore. But when I first started working on that, I was in LA, I was like 19 years old, but I was a kid who knew who Lenny Bruce was and the director was very impressed. And, it took him years to make the film. Oh, decade almost. But I was given a box of Lenny's stuff from his daughter that was a box of journals and cassette tapes.
What the fuck, man?
That was like his journals, his notes, and like some of them were live, like bootleg recordings, like his bootleg recordings of his shows. And some of them were just him walking around the house with like this new invention, the tape recorder. And playing with his daughter and making and just riffing and just goofing around. And it was at a time when if it was now, I'd like have all that stuff backed up and scanned before I gave it back. But at the time, my job was just to go through and take notes. So I sat there and listened to everything and just took notes on what was a live show, what was what, for about 2 weeks doing kind of what you're doing now, just transcribing his shit. That is some funny ass sync, man.
That's pretty major, man.
You put three mirrors in a room, what do you see?
You got some master cleansing bartenders who transcribe old Jewish comics, man.
Crazy. Fucking awesome.
Yeah.
And it's so funny because Alan, I don't know, but maybe this is part of it. Alan does. He resonates some. He carries some Lenny Bruce energy, big time. And maybe that's one of the reasons that we gravitate towards him.
Yeah.
Thank you guys. I really kept thinking that we should do something where I thought if the two of you got to speak to each other, there would be some really interesting chemistry there. But I said that sync the other day just sort of blew me away, and then
nobody knows or cares about Lenny Bruce at all. That's what's so fucking weird.
But beyond, it would be one thing. It would be funny if it was like, oh, I was just listening to Lenny Bruce, or even if he was transcribing something, but it was a different concert. It was the exact same thing. Literally, I just finished listening to this guy talk for an hour, and then, you know, and that's one specific recording, and then, you know, of how many must he have, and then that's what Bill puts up, is I just finished transcribing the Berkeley concert. And I was like, wait, are you talking about this one?
Yeah, I thought you were messing with me. I just couldn't even really process it when I saw it. It just was a little too much in the moment.
Go to my blog, the reason I sent it to him was because I put it in my blog the week before.
Well, there you go.
So that's a verifiable sync.
That's heavyweight.
Unsync that one.
That's heavyweight.
Oh, don't ever say something's unsinkable. We'll have to get James Cameron to direct it. Boys, this has been a wonderful day. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Awesome. Great to talk to you later.
Later.
Trying to make me high.